This is Mark from Artificer Woodworks.
Hi, this is Susan of Fruitful Hands Dolls.
Hi, I'm Monica Sisk with Vintage Stamp Jewels.
Hi, my name is Elisa Lowe. I'm with Door Number 9 on Etsy.
Hi, I'm Julia, and I'm from a Golden Garden.
Hi, I'm Tess.
And I'm Mary, and this is the Etsy Success Podcast.
We're part of the seller marketing team here at Etsy, broadcasting from Etsy's headquarters in Brooklyn. The Etsy Success Podcast is your source for tips on improving your shop and for inspiration from your fellow sellers. Our goal is to empower, inspire, and motivate you to be the entrepreneur that you want to be.
This podcast is powered by Etsy, where millions of people around the world connect to make, sell, and buy unique goods. Follow your passion and start your Etsy business today.
So before we get started, we have a small favor to ask of you. It would be really great if you can fill out our survey so we can learn more about you and find out what you like and dislike. Also, we can make this podcast the best it can be. So just head to etsy.me/podcast survey. The link is in the description for this episode. And again, it's etsy.me/podcast survey.
So with the holidays fast approaching, this is high time for holiday markets and craft fairs and those kinds of things, which I'm always super stoked to go to.
Yeah, I really love going to those markets and fairs because I know I need to buy a lot of gifts and I know I want them to be unique and special. And I'm excited because I never know what kind of gems and really interesting items I'm going to find when I go.
Especially too with the tables and just the way that different people like set up their tables and the different kinds of things, you really get a sense of the seller's personality and all of that stuff. And yeah, and I love talking to sellers at their booths and stuff like that.
Yeah. And when you're a seller, you get to see your customers in person and you can get a sense of what their style is. You might get inspiration for new products that you want to make based on what they might be, you know, wearing mm-hmm. or whether they mention that they're buying their item as a gift for someone else.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, if they, like, look at a lot of people are looking at a thing, but they're not buying it, like, what yeah. is it too high of a price point? You know, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. It's another way to have market research in a way that I feel like you can't really get any yeah. other place.
It's also just really cool to get that face-to-face connection with your customers. And I know that Jenny from the Etsy shop, Jay Topolsky, I talked to you today, and I only found out about her because of you, Mary, after you met her at a holiday market.
I did indeed. I met her many years ago, and I think it was actually an Etsy New York team holiday market originally. Mm-hmm. She had this line of jewelry focused on bees, and I love bees. I cry about bees regularly and that kind of thing. And it was also something, it was jewelry that I'd never seen before, like anything like it before. And I was so stoked to have somebody to nerd out about bees with. Mm-hmm. So I chatted up with her for a little while, and yeah, and I've been a fan ever since.
Yeah, you have bought more of her jewelry since then, right?
Yes, and people have bought it for me as gifts. I have spread the Jay Topolsky word.
Yeah, that's that face-to-face connection that I'm talking about. Like, selling in person really helped her build customer loyalty with you and made you a repeat buyer. And that's why I talked to Jenny, because she has so much experience with selling at fairs. She's been doing it for over 7 years and even helps run a local holiday market. In her spare time, she's a wildlife rehabilitator and an active member of her local Etsy team. So, welcome, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
You have an illustration degree. What led you to jewelry making?
I found my way to jewelry making based on my interest in printmaking. I was focusing on etching, traditional acid etching, and printing them. And then one day I realized the part that I liked the most was actually etching the metal more than the printing process. So I realized I could just etch metal and do something else with it. And I slowly found my way to wearing it instead of just having objects with it.
Oh. You were etching and drawing things you were interested in, like
exactly.
nature, like animals.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It all just kind of combined into one brand and method of yeah. jewelry only instead of all sorts of different objects.
Yeah. Have you just always been very into like being outdoors and nature?
I'm actually not very outdoorsy.
Well, you do live in New York, so yeah.
I'm a city girl through and through, so I'm more of a Central Park nature kind of person.
Do you have pets?
I do. I have one cat, and I am a wildlife rehabilitator as a hobby, so sometimes I have some orphaned squirrels or a baby possum or something like that also.
It's really cool that you're able to also bring that into your shop.
Exactly. It all comes together. It's all animals and wildlife and environmentally conscious things. So it all fits together. And I think that's why my business has become successful, because there is a clear point of view in mm-hmm. all of it. I have a targeted audience and people who are going to be attracted to what I do specifically.
Yeah. How do you feel like you learned to express that in your shop?
It did mostly just happen naturally. I also did have to make some decisions along the way and look at what was working, what made me happier, what was frustrating, what was selling, and then just sort of drill down on what was working and slowly taking away what wasn't working or what was maybe too time-consuming or labor-intensive or expensive, to just slowly find the right balance of something that could support me and so that I could have the lifestyle I wanted and be making things that I believe in.
Yeah, I feel like that's also a thing that people can struggle with, figuring out your profit margins with
yes.
different products. Is there anything you learned about figuring that out?
I have a wide variety of prices in my line. The cheaper things often are really fast to make. Even regardless of what the supply costs are, I'm usually able to sell them at a lower cost because it's the time investment. Mm. Because I'm trying to pay myself, you know, a good wage hourly. But then the thing that I learned, that so that I can still make the things I really want to make without feeling like a slave to the profit, some items you can make a lower profit on because you're selling enough of something else mm-hmm. that you can maybe speed through quickly and churn them out pretty fast. But then something that's really labor intensive, like my sloth cuff or something that, you know, I have to set stones, I have to carve it. Even though that's an expensive item, my profit isn't good on that item. But I love being able to make it. And some of the other items, once all of the money comes in at the end of the month, it all kind of works together.
Yeah, and it's worth it too, because then you can cater to a wide variety of people.
And you really want to support that, because you want to build a client base that sticks with you and believes in you and wants to come back and see what's new. And I've had people who started buying my products, you know, 8 years ago, and then they've gotten older, they've started earning more money, and they've kind of graduated in what they purchase from me. And it's really nice to have sort of that entry level item where they really like what I'm doing, but maybe they can't quite afford one of my pricier items yet, mm-hmm. but they're happy to support you.
Definitely. So you've been selling in person for over 7 years now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how have you found markets that are right for your shop?
You really have to go visit them. You got to just walk them, talk to the vendors there in a friendly way and in a professional way. Ask them how it's going. Look at who's there. Look at the customer who's there. Try to look and see if people are actually purchasing. Like when you scan the crowd, is it just people walking around drinking coffee, or is it people actually purchasing? Like you see, you know, packages going across table mm-hmm. and credit cards. And you also have to look at the prices. You have to be realistic about the costs. If a market has repeat vendors again and again, that's a great sign that the market is treating them well, is marketing itself well, that the vendors are having a successful time at it. It's been good for their business. Those are really good signs.
Yeah. So how do you go about preparing for those events?
If I've done that market or a similar market before, I look at the sales data from the previous one. That helps me to plan my inventory for it. But if it's an event where you know that you're going to see a lot of people who are more, say, science inclined, like if it's a maker's fair or something like that, you can really think about the products you're bringing and who's going to be there. Mm-hmm. If it's a Mother's Day event, you want to think about birthstones and initials. You know, that's how you would sort of prepare for inventory. And display is, I mean, you can get inspiration for display anywhere. Pinterest is great, Instagram. You want things that are portable and that set up quickly. You don't want to have to spend 3 hours building your booth. Mm-hmm. You're not there to be a set designer. You're there to sell your products. You just have to think about the market. If this is a big week-long event or trade show or something, you know, then yeah, you want to invest in a serious build out and do a great job and invest in the styling and the setup. But if this is your normal craft fair, you don't want to over worry about your display build out. You just want to have things clean and neat and organized and just available to the customer. And then you want to think about your packaging, your ability to sell. Like, you want to have your credit card readers, your change. Don't forget to bring change. People still pay in cash. You want to just think for all the things that can happen, like have tape, have string, have clothespins and clips, and all kinds of things can happen, and you just want to be prepared to just move with it seamlessly and not get flustered when something goes wrong. So you can't bring too much. Like, I feel so much worse if I sell out of something totally. You would think that would make you feel good, but it makes you think, oh, wow, I probably could have sold more of these if only I'd known. And then as you keep going, you kind of get a better grasp on the quantities to bring to different sorts of events. But in the beginning, you really just want to have as much as you can so that you can learn what's going to sell and have it available. You don't want to go overboard on putting out the money on your inventory, though, if you're not there financially yet. Another thing I think people don't think about, it's really important to have your prices available. I sell at markets, and I still hate asking people what prices are for things if they don't have them out. So I think it's really important to have your prices be available to the customer, because a lot of people are shy.
Yeah, like, you might not make a sale because someone doesn't want to ask.
It's really true.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that brings me to my next question. Actually, what's your pricing strategy for markets and fairs?
Because I wholesale, I don't actually change my prices dramatically at any venue, online, in person, anything, because I never know when I'm going to see someone who is a retailer, and you want to make sure that your prices are consistent then. However, if you don't wholesale, you have a lot of leeway in your pricing. You can think about the fact that they're not paying shipping at a market if you include shipping in your prices. You can do sort of like a show special to incentivize them to buy now instead of just coming to look and then buying online. But in general, I think consistent pricing makes you more professional.
In the beginning, did you do that with your prices?
Yeah, in the beginning, I actually used shows to find out the prices that worked. So I changed them pretty often, actually. That was when I found what prices worked. Like, I would see people's face when they, like, you're getting visual data, for better or for worse. Like, they would be like, oh, wow, I thought this was going to be more expensive. Or, oh, wow, I did not expect it to be so expensive. It's actually really helpful to get that sort of feedback instant. And people have no filter. They will tell you things you didn't need to hear. And they everything will be clear on their face.
Yeah, do you have advice on, like, the energy that you want to bring to a fair?
You just have to be ready for the fact that people come from all different backgrounds of politeness, and you have to have a thick skin and be confident in what you're doing and not take things personally.
I think it's also one of those things where you have to just still bring that energy in, because when you're probably going to have, like, your business cards there, and people do take, you know, the card home and then they buy from you on Etsy. I know that I've done that before.
Absolutely, yeah. People who shop on Etsy want to buy from a person and support you and your business. So the fact that they met you at some point, that's a really good way to gain an online consistent customer, because they feel more invested in you personally. They remembered the conversation you had. I obviously vibe out with a lot of people about animal stuff. So I know a lot of my customers' favorite animal, or that time when they were a kid and, you know, they helped a baby squirrel. And I hear all of it. And I really enjoy those relationships with people that I've developed because of selling in person. I have customers who come to my markets every single year for the holidays and buy gifts and ask me what's new, and, oh, did I make this dog breed yet, and make requests for the following year, and I listen to them. The customer feedback for me is really important, because my brand particularly, I can incorporate trends, because we all know there's always a trendy animal, right? So I can get on some trends without being completely beholden to them or being considered like a trendy jewelry line. Like, maybe a fox was the animal of the year a couple years ago, but people are always still going to love foxes. So it's a little easier than just a pure trend. But yeah, you look around and you see the other things that people are selling at markets too. And it can be really helpful for you to be like, oh, this is oversaturated. I actually don't want to make this product anymore. Or the reverse. You're like, wait, people are really into, you know, pyramids or whatever. I have this design I've been thinking about that could incorporate a pyramid. And that seems like something that, you know, people are into right now. You can follow it in the right ways.
Definitely. So, jewelry can be difficult to photograph.
Oh my God.
Can you describe your photo setup for me?
Yes. I use natural lighting and a Canon 5D. I used to play around with a lot of different backgrounds and seeing what would work. And over time, I discovered just the classic white background. Having it all just be about your product and not a lot of distracting backgrounds. That was when my shop really started being more successful, was when the photography became consistent. Just going back through and reshooting things and improving all the time. I still go back and reshoot things consistently because I can always improve it.
Was that a big turning point for you?
I think that was a big moment in me just being able to do this more full time. The photography shift and consistently getting good on model shots was really important. Once your photos are consistent, you look like a real shop. You look like a brand. People recognize it. And also your eye, just when you go to a homepage and everything goes together and flows, it looks like a professional storefront. It doesn't look like a mishmash. So you need to keep an eye on the overall look and not just like the individual shots and individual products. I think some best practices for product photography are good lighting. It sounds obvious, but it's hard to figure out a way to do consistently, especially if you use natural light. So you need to write down everything. That's a good way to learn what's working. Write down the time of day, whether it's overcast, you know.
Like a photo journal.
Exactly. Make notes and then go back to the ones that were the most successful and try to shoot in consistent times. Mm. Or you can do a little photo tent. You can just buy those for like $60 online, or you can make them. And that way you don't have to worry about the weather.
Yeah.
I think not having distracting backgrounds. Although there are really lovely shops that have, you know, they're famous for their driftwood background or the little kitchenscape that they shoot things on or whatever it is, but it's always consistent.
Yeah.
That is the key, is to just make sure that the environment you're shooting your product in is appropriate for it. Mm-hmm. There isn't just random flowers behind it just because.
Yeah.
There should be logic to it and something that is attractive to the type of person you're trying to sell to.
Yeah. So you've been the captain and leader of a few Etsy teams. What has that been like?
I love it. I love being a part of and being a leader on Etsy teams because I work from home and I have always been self-employed. Having a strong network and community of other people going through the same things is completely indispensable. I've honestly, some of my best friends I made through the team.
Like, really?
Just, they've moved away to other places. We still visit each other, talk all the time. I have people I can email or call or text with pretty much every problem at this point. And vice versa. I am so happy and proud when people come to me with a question because it's validating to realize, oh my God, I've learned, I can answer this, like I'm helpful for you.
Your workspace is in your home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it big, small, like
tiny?
So how do you make the most of a tiny workspace?
I have a policy that has really helped me. I do break it sometimes, but I always go back to it. I don't put anything on the floor. And that is the big thing for me mentally that makes the big difference. Everything has to have a space it goes on, a shelf or on a surface or something. And my jewelry desk may be incredibly messy, but as long as nothing goes on the floor, usually it doesn't go down the slippery slope of disaster.
Now it's time for the lightning round. And this is where we have collected questions from the forums and the Etsy Success social channels for you. So, Becca Ron asks, do you have different items that sell better online versus in person and vice versa?
I do have items that sell better online or in person. It's kind of funny, though, because they're opposites. I sell my most expensive and my least expensive items better in person.
Oh.
Because the least expensive ones are an easy impulse buy.
Mm-hmm.
But then the most expensive ones, a lot of the time somebody came there specifically to see it in person before they pulled the trigger.
Lola Falk from Lola Falk Leather Goods says, throughout your years of being in business, is there one tool, service, or app you came across that was a real game changer in helping your business?
Having an automated bookkeeping system is just, I can't believe I waited as long as I did. I've had it for quite a few years now, but any of the, you know, software that's out there is all probably fine. Just pick the one, the interface you like the best. But just having it linked to your business cards, you're not going back through your receipts and manually categorizing everything. Like, you automate it and clean it up monthly, like go back through it and look at it. Not having a pile of receipts in April is really good.
Catherine from Calicat asks, any tips for managing the upcoming busy Christmas season?
To go into this busy season, you have to remember to take some time outside of work. For me, I make sure to not skip dance classes, the things that keep me happy and healthy, make sure to eat right. As crazy and simple as this sounds, you get swept up in the work season and don't take care of yourself. And it's important to keep a little bit of balance in your life.
Phyllis Stevens from Blue Rose Cards asks, any advice for someone just opening their first shop, perhaps some do's and don'ts?
My advice when you first open a shop is to treat it like a real business from the very beginning. Set everything up the way it is supposed to be set up. Don't just think like, oh, it's a hobby, it's no big deal. Like, make sure you know what you're doing with your sales tax. Make sure you have any licenses you need. Set up your shop policies. Fill out every single field that you can fill out for your shop from the beginning. Don't plan to get back to it later on. It's always harder to go back and clean something up than to just set it up right from the beginning.
Thanks so much for being here today with me, Jenny.
Thank you for having me, Tess. This was great.
As always, we'd like to bring the episode to a close with Shop Talk. For this segment, we post a question in the forums and on the Etsy Success Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for you to answer by calling in or emailing us a voice memo. We got some great responses when we asked you about your proudest moment in your Etsy shop. Here are some of the ones you sent in.
I'm Hannah from Purple Watermelon. The proudest moment in my shop history has got to be receiving my first ever 5-star review from a stranger. It was just lovely to hear that someone who didn't know me had actually liked something that I had made when it was just little old me painting away in my garden. That review took away all the doubt I had about my designs being good enough.
I'm Mary, a fashion student studying to be a trend forecaster while selling vintage in my Etsy shop, MewView. The proudest moment in my shop's history was when I sold a leather jacket to the design house of Yves Saint Laurent in Paris. This sale made me realize I was already following my dreams of predicting the future of fashion with inspiration from vintage.
Hi, this is Anna of The Pretty Peacock. There have been a lot of proud moments, but the proudest moment was when I knew that I would be able to support myself, my 2 children, and my household, which allowed me to end a failing marriage and be completely self-sufficient, which is pretty much worth its weight in gold. So I have Etsy to thank for that. It got me started, it keeps me going still, and I am so happy to be part of this community.
For our next episode, we want to know what the biggest moment was for your shop in 2017. Did you hit a milestone of some kind? Did you start selling wholesale or quit your day job? Or was this the year that you made your first sale? Any of those things, all those things, we want to hear them. You can leave us a message with your answer by calling in at 917-947-9704, or you can record a voice memo on your phone and email it to us at podcast@etsy.com. Remember, keep your message to a minute or less and start off by telling us your name and your Etsy shop name. That's it for today, but please, if you have a spare moment, give us feedback through our survey at etsy.me/podcast survey. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, so you'll be the first to know about all of our new episodes. Thanks for listening.